EMSradio.com.
EMS information for the next generation.
The EMS Leadership Podcast is a production of EMSradio.com. You can interact with us via email, emsleadership@gmail.com, or call us 303-720-6001.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the EMS Leadership Podcast. And now here's your host, Chris Ceballero.
Well, here it is, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on EMS Leadership, another great show, and here we go with it. You know, one of the things that I think is really important to talk about as leaders, we spend a lot of time developing some really good processes. Some things we develop from scratch, other things we get from our peers. You know, why reinvent the wheel if we don't have to? What we've done is we've outlined some great processes. We're going to deliver some great patient care. Our organization are going to stand out. Does that really work out that way? I mean, sometimes we get to the point where those processes aren't followed. How many times as a leader have you said, what does the policy say? What does the protocol say? Or did you follow the policy? And a lot of times the answer is, that's right, you guessed it, no. So let's go ahead and talk about how we ensure that those processes are taken and followed as after they're written. But let's go ahead and bring those folks in. Our international correspondent, Rob Lawrence. Rob, how are you doing?
Well, good morning from the Commonwealth of Virginia. The sun is out, and for the first time, we're putting the air conditioning on. So hopefully it's going to get warmer.
Well, that's pretty awesome. You know, I find it still amazing that somebody from England actually is still living in Virginia. So I want to thank you for doing that.
I still can't bring myself to visit Yorktown, just so you know.
Okay, and let's go out to the West Coast, Patrick Pianezza. Patrick, how are you?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
And thank you very much. We are recording this pretty early in the morning for California time, and you went ahead and made that effort to get up early just to be on the show.
I sacrificed for this show, Chris.
That's right.
I just want you to know.
One less beer in the evening time to be up on time. Let's go out to Charleston, South Carolina, and our good friend Don Lundy. Don, how are you doing?
Doing great, Chris. Fantastic to be on the show, especially on a Saturday morning.
Thank you very much. And Don, I know people are concerned. You know, they know that the things have gone on in Charleston, South Carolina over the past couple weeks with the shooting. Just really quick, how's the organization doing? How's the city doing? How are you guys holding up?
Doing real well. As a matter of fact, everybody will be happy to know, regardless of how the press might paint something, that the community has stood behind both the family of this poor man who was murdered, and the police officers, all of them, with the exception of this one, being honorable people who try to do the right thing. And it's a very delicate balance for them to do, but they've done that. And I've been very proud about how our elected officials have handled this and how the community has.
Right. Well, you know, we send our send our prayers out to you guys, and we're hoping everything works out and things don't escalate. So, I usually start off with a question, but I want to start off with some comments instead. So, you know, you heard the setup of we set up those processes, and then just sometimes those processes aren't followed. So my first question to you really is, why do you think that happens? And Rob, you know, you're in a high-performance EMS system, chief operating officer. Why isn't that our processes, that they're followed when they need to be followed?
Well, perhaps it's how you deliver those processes, and we say processes, not processes. And so it's how you actually introduce those, and then how you place the emphasis on those, of course, is the key to how they're going to be followed. And so, you know, we're about to change our corporate handbook, in fact. And so the first thing we've realized is that we're not going to do it piecemeal. We're not going to dribble it out there. It's how you issue the process in the first place. So as an example, we're about to do a wholesale change of our staff handbook. And what we're not going to do is put it out in dribs and drabs, because people will eventually become kind of, you know, it will become stale. They'll get fed up with receiving the emails to check the book. So we are getting everything together, and we're putting it out in a one-er, and then we're going to do a huge sort of briefing session to make people aware of the changes that are coming down the pike, so they understand. So first of all, don't let folk become complacent, and don't keep, you know, pick a point and then do a wholesale change. And that way you have a better chance of people understanding what's in the process, what's in the standard operational procedures, what's in the company policies. And so they have a better understanding. And of course, sometimes you have to keep it simple, because if we have an abundance of processes, practices, and procedures, then it becomes confusing sometimes. And it's a very fine balance to strike, but it's one that you have to think about as a manager, nevertheless.
Don, what do you think? Why don't they follow these processes?
Well, I think you need to look a little further back as to why they don't follow them, as to why we can't figure out why they don't follow them. You know, follow-up in general in EMS is not that good. We've never done that good of a job since EMS started. And it's not so much our fault as the culture that we have. I commonly talk about the timeline of managers versus the timeline of paramedics and EMTs. The timeline of those personnel that we put these processes to, thank you, Rob, for that correction, the processes to have a 20-minute timeline. Most of their work is on a 20-minute timeline. They have a 20-minute patient. They have about a 20-minute time in the ER. Most meals are about 20 minutes long. They have a very short timeline until they go on to the next project. When we put a process out there and we say, hey, we want you to do X, or we have this project we're going to put out there that deals with cardiac care, and I want you to do Y, if for some reason it goes off kilter, if for some reason somebody decides to do it a little bit better, and we all know that we as EMS personnel are not type A personalities, so would not figure out 10 times better to do it than the managers would, if it goes off kilter, we're just not very good at following up on that. We put the process out there and we expect people to follow it. And only when somebody does something in the level of a bonehead move do we, as you said, open up the book and say, what did we tell them again? Or what was the policy again? And when we look, we either realize A, that's not what the policy says, or B, that wasn't our intent. And I think if we were a little better at follow through, and I don't mean following somebody and hitting them on the head when they do something wrong, I mean watching this process work its way out, seeing each of them go through that project and how well they do, and at the end asking them, coming full circle and asking them what was right and what was wrong and what are we missing, I think we'd do it a little bit better. But I think it's mostly the culture that we're raised in 20-minute increments. We're just not very good at follow-through.
Yeah, I really like how you said that, and that does make a lot of sense. Patrick, I want to change your question a little bit, because as our hospital expert, and you know as well as I do, that now hospitals are being so held their feet to the fire when it comes to getting the reimbursement that they need, and they're putting a lot of these processes in place. And I say processes, Rob, because I'm from New York City. If I say process, I'm afraid of now eating Yorkshire pudding and warm beer, so I ain't doing it. But the process that you guys are putting in place to ensure patient satisfaction, to get bigger reimbursements, you know they're not being followed. What do you think the challenge is there?
Well, it's a very complicated issue, and I think the most important one is that we change our process. We change our process so often.
Really? You couldn't side with the host, right? An Italian? All right, go on.
Tomato.
I think the issue with the process is simply this, that we issue them so quickly and oftentimes without realizing what the unintended consequences are for the staff, that they just get fatigued. And so what happens is today we're doing something like this, and then tomorrow we realize that because of the documentation system, we can't do it the first way. So quickly send out an email and expect everybody to do the process like plan B for the documentation step. And then we find out, okay, so the documentation step works well, but we can't utilize the follow-up system because of the way we're doing it in B. So then you'll see workarounds of, okay, so you're going to do plan B with a Band-Aid fix of, you know, X. And it gets very, very fatiguing for our frontline staff. And ultimately, they end up doing workarounds. And I truly don't believe it's employees going, I don't want to follow the process because I don't want to do what's best for my patient. Oftentimes, when you start rounding on your providers, they just tell you, I want to do a good job, but frankly, I've gotten so many emails or I don't know what's going on that I'm not even sure what the right way is, and this is the way that I do it because, you know, ultimately it's either a time saver or sometimes they believe it's the right way when in fact it's not. And to me, that's a failure of leadership. I think oftentimes, especially in EMS and in the hospital side, we like to fix things very quickly. So it's kind of like, oh, you can't do this? All right, well, change the policy. We'll just do it this way from now on, without really looking at what the unintended consequences are down the line. And if we take a step back and realize that the building is not on fire and truly walk through all the different steps of changing what seems like this insignificant little process is, and then coming out with a fully a full understanding of how does this impact your clinical documentation? How does this impact your discharge planning? How does this impact your interactions with your patients? How does this impact the individual care providers doing their day-to-day work? And if you actually have that whole holistic thing figured out before you say, oh, it's easy, just turn this little switch on in the EMR, for so to say, then you'll have more compliance. I think it's when leadership starts to piecemeal things is when things start to get very, very challenging for our people that are providing the care.
Yeah, and I think that's what Rob was saying before. Don, let me ask you this. You know, we're developing processes, but we've talked about it on this show quite a bit. And how important is it to get the workforce to the table when we start to either, you know, look at – and that's something that we don't do well enough. You know, we change our protocols when we need to. Are we upgrading our policies as we need to? But are we challenging our processes? You know, this goes back to the whole thing of why do you do it? This is the way we've always done it. Do we need to put in regular time that we are looking at the processes, that we're challenging our process, and we're getting our workforce to the table to say, do these processes still work for you? Does that answer the question?
I think it answers a big part of it. It's not the entire process, but you do two things when you do that. You know, nobody knows this job better than the boots on the ground. And as much as we as managers would like to say, I've done this for 41 years, I am the first one to tell my crews that I'm probably the dumbest paramedic they have, because I've done it for so long that I say, in the day when we used to give bicarb every 5 minutes until the patient fizzed, and then they kind of lose their interest and they want to hear another story. We absolutely in the process have to get boots on the ground. And sometimes when we do a project, there's a lot of what I would call flotsam and jetsam that doesn't much have to do with them. And I'll give you a classic example. We're working on a project right now going to electronic payroll, signing in and signing out electronic payroll. So I guess I can go ahead and tell everybody, yes, a county of 7,000 people, we're still doing paper, and it is challenging. And the EMS departments kind of stood up and said, we'd like to try electronic. Well, there's a lot of floats and jitsum to that development, but I have asked at each of the meetings, when are we going to have several people who are boots on the ground in on the meetings to tell us that will work or that won't work or why are we doing that? Because they're the ones that have to use the equipment we buy. They're the ones that have to put the protocol out. And more often than not, if we don't ask them in, it's going to fail early on because of something we didn't see. For the same reason that when a high-level process goes into effect and boots are on the ground, they're not going to see the high-level process. So I think that is a large answer to the both issues. One, to find out what you don't know, and two, to get some buy-in to the process. So it's not, this shouldn't be mine or yours or hers or his. It should be our project to put out there. And if you get through, I don't know whether it's an hour or 6 hours or 10 hours, and the group as a whole says, we ought to step down, we're talking about the wrong animal, that's okay. That's all right. It's better than to create a five-wheeled bicycle and realize nobody needs one. So I think to have boots on the ground involved in all the projects, especially when you're talking about a project that's out there and you want to circle it back through and say, no, what's good and what's bad, I would caution anybody who, and people that do this, I know everybody on this podcast does this, but those that have said, well, I'm really going to take the plunge, that be ready to hear what you might not want to hear. Don't ask the question if you don't want the answer, and sometimes that answer is pretty ugly. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think it takes care of a lot of the issue of, I'm going to use a term I haven't used in years and years, forcing a project down somebody's throat because you know what's best, when in fact, as a manager, you might not have actually touched a patient in some time. And even if you have, and you know, I tell people on the podcast all the time, I go on calls on a regular basis, but I do not know what these young men and women that are out there doing it every day know. And I turn to them often and go, I can teach you something that's old, but I need to know why you did that. That's pretty cool. And I often learn from them much more than they'll ever learn from me.
Don's made some excellent points, actually. There's a great saying in the military that says that tactics is no longer the opinion of the senior officer present. In other words, if you've got a bright idea, if you can see the end game, the objective and the goal, then speak up and say something, because as Don said, you know, we're not the owners of all the knowledge and power anymore. Time is moving on, and I agree that, you know, we have a number of staff committees. For example, we're about to go out for a new set of monitors. The staff are absolutely key in that decision making process, and so that's absolutely the thing. Now, there's a flip side
to tomato.
This. Thank you very much, sir. There's a flip side to this, and the flip side is, why are people listening to us on a Saturday morning or whenever we broadcast this to a number of guys talking about process, call it what you will? Well, here's the important thing I think that we need to work out here, and that's, we need to involve staff. If you're in a unionized environment, then of course they have a key part in developing your processes, practices, procedures, tactics, etc. And then we must follow those practices, processes, procedures, etc., because for one simple reason, lack of adherence to those procedures and processes is an ambulance chasing lawyer's dream. Because if something goes wrong, notice I was being optimistic there, if something goes wrong, the first question you asked is, so show me your documentation, show me those processes, and show me that you did or didn't follow them. And that in turn can then lead to litigation, lead to big cost, etc. So once we've established them, we must follow them for a very good legal and protective reason.
I kind of like that. And, you know, when we think about exactly what you said, is the very first thing anyone is going to ask is, show me the processes, show me the documentation, and show me that you followed them. So Patrick, let's go ahead and get into the weeds now. I mean, because we've kind of talked about theories, we kind of talked about why it's important, but how do we now ensure that the processes are being followed? You know, we went through all this work, we got people to the table, you know, we determined what was the best practice that we were going to follow. Now, how do we ensure that's happening? How do we make it work?
Well, I think it's a twofold question, and I get this question a lot, especially as it pertains to patient experience. And so the first answer is what everybody hates, and that's logs. So what you do is, once you've created a new process that's bulletproof for the first month or three, depending on how big of a change this process is, you have logs. You have the people fill them out saying that they did this new process every day or every shift or however often it's implied. And then ultimately, you can transition from the logs. And this is one of those things that drives employees crazy, is that people don't transition away from those logs. You have logs going back from like the 1980s. One of my favorite jokes that Rich Bluny says is, you know, we're not lumberjacks. We shouldn't be just managing logs. And so you start with the logs to ensure some form of accountability, or at least it's a passive form of accountability and a reminder to the people that, hey, this is a new process, this is how it's got to be done, sign or initial or check here every time you do it. And then, like I said, by the latest 3 months, you should be able to transition from those logs and look at the outcomes. So the outcomes now become the accountability step that the logs used to be. And if you're starting to see a failure on the outcomes, whatever those outcomes are, whether they are a clinical measure, whether they are a supply issue, whatever those are, if you start to see the outcomes starting to decrease away from whatever it is your process started, then you go back to the logs, or you start looking at the individuals that are leaning away from the process. And ultimately, that comes down with accountability. Find out, is it a leadership issue? Is it a crew issue? Don't kid yourself. You're going, as soon as you change a process, within 2 weeks, somebody's going to stand up and fight against it, say it's dumb or blatantly disregard it, to see if this is going to be a flash in the pan or some monumental change to the way that you do your day-to-day operations. And the ability to meet that opposition in a professional manner. I'm not saying come down like a bag of bricks on them, but meet that challenge in a respectful way, to have them understand at the frontline level why this process was changed, what is its improvement, and what does it do for your organization in a meaningful way, and have a conversation about it. Ultimately, is what's going to drive that change.
How are we going to get the guys, the troops, the medics on the ground to do it? And I've just been jotting a few notes down. And from our organization, again, you said it's a high-performance organization. We're very proud of that. We look for efficiency in everything. And it's not because we're just efficiency-driven. Well, we are efficiency-driven, quite simply, because at the end of the day, we have to run our organization as a business, because our payer mix in our inner classic American inner city, shall we say, is not great. So we have to find efficiencies in everything to deliver a high-quality system based on a fairly limited amount of income. So what do? Things like electronic patient care records, we're able to input close call rules so we can actually adhere to those protocols and policies and procedures. Our logistic effort, for example, we make it a sense of pride. Every vehicle that goes through our make-ready system, they have a little green card that goes in the dash at the end of the make-ready process, the stocking, the washing, the decontamination, etc., and it shows who, what time it was done and who did it. So we were able to then, if there's an issue, go back and say, well, who did that? It's kind of a log that Patrick referred to. We also have a total quality management process and a total quality management committee. So I actually have a total quality manager, and he's responsible for looking at all of those processes and procedures. And we have a monthly meeting where we look at everything from compliance to adherence to the key protocols and procedures. And that's something that we elect to do. But also we have a friendly Medicare attorney that comes in and looks at how we're doing business to make sure we are actually maximizing that limited income that we can get. But also outside of that, if you want to ensure that you are on top of your game and you are adhering to your policies and procedures, go out and get accredited. Go out and get a CAS in, because what CAS does is it challenges you to be the best you can be by developing those procedures and then monitoring them, sticking to them, and following them as a matter of best practice. If you don't want to do that, of course, your state regulations require you to do certain things, and you are liable to spot inspections. You have to have relicensing every couple of years. And so, again, you have to have a process to you have to have a process in order to monitor your processes, because people are going to come and watch you whether you want them to or not. But actually, it's not a bad thing to have people coming in, because you then stay on top of your own game.
And I would add to that, Rob said exactly what I was going to say. The idea of taking a process and measuring it and looking at it and coming around in a circle, let's back up a little further. And we've really had to, our organization has had to challenge ourselves. We have, I'll bet a dozen. We're really heavy on several projects we're working on, to the point that, you know, we're exhausted at the end of the day. It's a good exhaustion, but this last Friday, we sat in one of the final meetings of the day, and we honestly admitted we're not very good at tracking of the process. We don't have a process for thinking up the process, and we always think of a medical protocol, and we always think of an ambulance build, and we always think of a piece of equipment. But Rob's right. If you go to accreditation, they're going to ask you, okay, I know about the EKG. Tell me how you got there. And when you start to explain the project, they'll say, no. Tell me how you got to talking about the project. And it really does open your mind up, open your head up to how easy it is to forget the sick guy in trying to get the process straight. Accreditation allows you to step way, way back at the 100,000-foot level and say, really, what is it I want to do with Project X? And do I have a process for just taking that out of thin air and making it happen? And if you don't, on the most part, you're stepping in the middle of the project, and it does. It lets you down a little bit. So we are just about to step into the accreditation world, and I can tell, because blood is going to shoot from my eyes. But I know at the end of the day, we will be much more organized, because I don't feel organized in these projects until a widget appears or until we're halfway down the road. And for the first part of it, we're just kind of guessing as to why we're doing this. We have the idea it's all for the patient care, but if you back up, that wasn't how it started. That's probably the most difficult part of that whole process, is letting somebody on the outside look and say, okay, I know you want ambulances, but why? Go to transport people. I know you want to transport people, but why? And eventually you realize that that accreditation process helps you keep order in a project where 10 projects are going on the table.
You know, one of the things, I'm happy that you guys brought this up, because this is one of the biggest things in our career field that you'll hear. Why do I need to be CAS accredited? Why is that important? It doesn't do anything for me. There are a lot of organizations that are out there that are just out there. And what the CAS accreditation will do for you is it'll give you best practices within your organization. There'll be no guessing. You'll know exactly what's going on, because you've got all these different components, from operations to dispatch to clinical to educational to whatever it is. Now you have those things in place. And it's really worth the money for your organization to say, I am going to go through the CAS accreditation process. I'm going to develop these components within my organization, and I am going to have a gold standard organization that I can be able to say, we do this, we do this, we do this, this is our efficiency, this is our effectiveness, and that's my sales pitch for the CAS accreditation. It's an incredible process to go through. It's going to make you stay up at night, before it happens. But in the end, you've now developed a gold standard system that anyone would want to be part of. Patrick, let me go ahead and jump to you, and I want to ask you this question. how now, brown cow? No, actually, how do we reinforce if processes aren't being followed? I mean, and I really think we got to get away from the term discipline. We really need to be more coaches. We need to be able to be more teachers. We need to be able to really get people to the understanding of why their position is important. But if processes aren't being followed, how do we reinforce those with the workforce?
I think it's a multi-head attack. And so I'm with you. I don't think you jump straight to the discipline. I think that's a losing proposition. So you start with, just like you would with anything else, you start with this idea of discussing ad nauseum why it's important. Why are we making this change? Is it efficiency? Is it cost? Is it better for the patient, obviously, is what we're aiming for. But getting that message out there and ultimately educating them as to how it impacts their day-to-day work. Because like Don was saying, all of our employees are on a 20-minute time frame. And even in the hospital, I mean, we've got a slightly elongated timeline, but still it's ultimately people that are coming in and taking care of patients that this is going to impact. So you start with the education. And once you get past the education, then you start moving towards getting buy-in. And it's kind of like an old card salesman's trick. And that is, when you get done with the meeting, you turn around and you ask them, how are you going to help us get to our goal? What is it that you can do differently to help us out to get better at whatever this process is that we're working on? And then ultimately, as you start to introduce this process, let them know up front, here's the accountability steps that we're looking at. So, I mean, when we start out, it'll be the first month will be reminders. And then as you progress towards 2 or 3 months and it becomes what you're expecting to do as the norm, then you start going up formal discipline. But, you know, that can be something as simple as a write-up to a suspension to termination, depending on what your process is and what it is that you're looking at. But more importantly, you can't use discipline as a first step. Kind of the, you know, you want something to cry about, I'll give you something to cry about, is a losing proposition. You have to start initially with the education piece and coach them. And part of the coaching is spending more time so that way your employees understand why it is that we're changing, and you're not changing a process just because you got bored this week. Ultimately, that's what I always see is a losing proposition for your employees. The employees want to do a good job, but they get fatigued because we're doing things, or more importantly, if they don't understand the reason behind it, that's when they start to push back truly, and you start looking at an organization that is starting to fall apart. So I always say educate first, and then slow, incremental, progressive discipline as appropriate for whatever that process is that you're changing.
Yeah, and I agree with what you're saying, and I think that anytime we deal with an employee issue, I usually put them into four categories. The first category, if there's an employee challenge, is that they weren't trained correctly, and there was something in the training process that caused them to not understand. Two, they don't have the equipment to do their job. If they don't have the equipment to do their job, there's going to be some challenges. It could cause the problem to happen. Three, it's the environment. There's something that's going on around them that's keeping them from following the process, and we need to be able to find out what it is and reinforce it. And fourth, sometimes it's just a behavioral problem. Sometimes it's just the person. And if you can put that into those four categories, then you're going to be able to make the determination of why the behavior exists. Don, let me go ahead and ask you this question as we kind of go with that theme I just said. Is there any value? And this is something that we don't do. I mean, we're really great at doing continuing education in our organizations, you know? But we don't talk about our processes and we don't retrain our processes. How many times have you heard as a leader, well, that's the way I was trained to do it? Should we start to do continuing education with our processes?
I think one of the real weak areas we have is not only training in our processes, but training us as managers. You know, when you read blogs and you listen to people about their bosses, and there's some great leaders out there, but there are people that, through no fault of their own really, have been shoved into the seat of greatness because they've been there the longest. And whereas they were tremendous paramedics, as a boss, they lack the training and they lack the gumption to go out and find the training. And before long, five projects are on the board, and your idea of working the project is go buy the widget and put it in the truck, and gosh, I hope they don't hurt anybody. And I think early on, when you sit, one of the questions you need to ask if you get put in a supervisor's seat, and it will frustrate everybody for the first year that you're there, is when they come in and say, listen, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, and we're going to do it this way, and say, okay, walk me through why you do it that way. walk me through. I have a new boss. She is absolutely awesome. Really backs EMS and ready to learn. And she asks me that all the time. Tell me why that happens. And it is an educational experience for me to go back and say, okay, so we've got to go back 10 years on this process. And as you walk it through, halfway through, you either realize you know what this is, and this is pretty easy, or you realize the words coming out of your mouth sound really silly, and you're going to have to stop and say, you know, I need to sit with staff for a minute and rethink this. And she doesn't do that to be mean. She really does want to know the process and to help you learn that maybe you don't know it. Maybe you don't know how you do that. And like I said, this Friday, we bemoaned for about a half an hour how once we get a project, we kind of step out of the room and start it, but we don't really have a process for tracking any of that or saying, what are the weak spots out there? What are the strong spots that we have that we can work off of? And I think it reduces your ability to lead. I think it makes the room smaller. Whenever we get a project going, I'll ask about 10 other departments that need to be involved in it, and they'll say, well, why do they need to be involved? Well, because they do. They might give you some ideas. And I think it just makes the world much smaller when you and your organization says, I'm going to go do this, and you don't include some of your team partners or certainly the boots on the ground to get it done. So I think absolutely we need to look at the process, and as I said before, be ready for the answer that you might not like. Don't assume everything's Disney World. You might have somebody say, well, we do that, but that's really stupid. There's nothing wrong with that, and you shouldn't be mad at that. They don't like it any more than you do, and they'd like to make it better.
Patrick, now, again, your expertise in the hospital setting and having worked in a hospital setting for the past 5 years, knowing exactly what painstaking process it goes through, how important is process improvement to an organization? Because one of the things that we think about is, you know, again, why do we do that? That's the way we've always done it. So we need to look at those processes. We need to ensure that they're, you know, the best practice. We need to make sure that they work the way that they should. Process improvement in an organization, how important is it?
It's absolutely critical. It's one of those things that it evolves as the organization evolves. You really can't, especially in this day and age, just fall back on things and say, well, this is the way we've always done it, so that's the way we're always going to do it. So process improvement really is about figuring out where are the shortfalls, where are there efficiencies to be gained, and where are the technology and the education of, you know, how to take better care of patients, and ultimately implementing that into a way that folds very well into your organization. So it's incredibly important to do, but it's more importantly to do it well. And so what I mean by that is somebody will always make the next widget and the next idea, the next great idea. We can go to a conference and come back with a binder full of ideas. It is leadership's job to prioritize those initiatives to figure out, A, what's going to work best for us, and how do we implement it into the day-to-day operations. And like Don was saying, you have to be very careful. He said he had 12 projects going. For an EMS system, I would say that's quite a few, and even in a hospital. But in hospitals, what you'll see is it's fragmented. So oftentimes, it's not being funneled from the top down. You'll have a nurse manager go to a conference and go, oh, this is the greatest thing ever, and wants to implement it on his or her unit. And you have a lot of that fragmented process improvement going on throughout the organization without any truly unified vision of how does it impact the overall operation. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's good for people to take initiative. However, it could be very taxing, again, to those people that are doing the job, because if I'm on this unit, I'm supposed to do it this way, and if I'm on another unit, I'm doing it another way. And it's not to say that piloting projects is not a good idea. Please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. Piloting is absolutely essential for anything to be successful because, again, you're working things out to figure out where are the bumps in the road. I think where leadership comes in as it pertains to process improvement is taking a strategic line and saying for the next year, these are the 5-10 projects that the entire organization is looking to fix, implement, or do, and not do them on the fly. So have people, I mean, in hospitals, typically you'll have an entire department dedicated to Lean, Six Sigma, process improvement, quality improvement, things like that nature. And you have a strategic meeting with them once a year, and you say, okay, these are the 5 or 10 initiatives that I want done by the close of business at the end of the year. Let's work together to make it happen. That's, to me, when you look at it, why it's important, because ultimately we all want to do the right thing by the patient, but oftentimes that gets muddled as in with this idea of, oh, I just learned the latest and greatest thing and it'll be, quote, an easy thing to do, without, again, realizing what those unintended consequences are down the line.
I think when we talked about the whole idea of getting boots on the ground, I think one of the things we can help is by, before we even start talking about the project, making people understand that this isn't a 20-minute timeline. It might not be a one-month timeline. That I'll use the example again of our payroll project. I told them right up front that we're going to get this on the ground in 6 months. However, this is probably an 18-month project, and it's going to take a lot of focus. And I said there'll be several meetings with. I mean, you give them the broad brush view, there's going to be a lot of IT meetings, and a lot of what they say, you might not understand. Raise your hand. Don't just sit there. Find out what the deal is. Some of it you don't need to know, or you won't need to know, and some of it you will, but you need to know that up front. And I think just making sure that people understand that the process improvement is not about, I agree with Patrick, it's not about beating people on the head. It's not about people learning that people did it really right or really wrong. But realizing that your idea of what the project's going to be is just one in a series of ideas. And more often than not, some of the greatest improvements to that project are going to come from the floor, are going to come from the boots on the ground, who are going to say, you know, we saw this the other day. And I think the biggest project and process improvements you can have is to tell them up front, when you bring us an idea, it is not like an idea in the field. I need to do harder CPR and you do it. It's not like that. We're going to take your idea and we're going to look at it 12 different ways and we're going to talk about it and stretch it apart. And we're going to run it out on a timeline. Don't get frustrated by it, but just work with it, because it's longer than what your timeline's supposed to be. And as long as people understand that, I think they really get into it. I think the process improvement gets bogged down when, particularly boots on the ground, but even managers that want to move fast. And I'll admit, I was a little this way. I think I've improved myself, but I want to get that done. I want to get it on the road. I want to get it going. And I have to remind myself that the project and the process we're working on isn't one of those. We need to slow down. So when Patrick said, you know, a dozen, that sounds like a lot. Trust me, Patrick, it is. And in fact, two of them, we're just not doing a lot. And we've acknowledged that we can't do 12 and do them right. So we're keeping them down to an even 10 and manage to keep all the ping pong balls underwater at the same time. But I think the process improvement is to letting the entire improvement team know improvement isn't done in increments of seconds or minutes or hours, and sometimes improvements in days, and it might not be your idea, and that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, this is really good stuff, guys, and I got to tell you that, the processes of managing our processes are very important. It doesn't help if we have things in place that we do not follow, because we're not going to be able to deliver highest quality of patient care. We're not going to give our customers the best service that we can. We're not going to be able to ensure that we're, you know, working at our fullest potential if we're not following those processes. So I'm not a guy in letting those processes sit. I want to challenge the processes all the time. So when people ask you why you do that, we can say it's effective, it's cost efficient, and so on and so on and so forth. On a personal note, I want to go ahead and leave you guys with this. I've left my position at Christian Hospital. I've had a great time over the past 5 years. There's been so many great efforts that are going on around the United States in community paramedicine. I've now started my own consulting business, Sabalero & Associates, and I'm helping hospitals transition to community paramedicine. I'm helping EMS systems understand the hospital ease so they can now talk with those partners at the table, doing leadership development, executive coaching, and process improvement. If there's anything that you've heard on the show that you want to talk more about, please reach out and touch base with me, and I'm happy to share it with you. For Patrick Pianezza, I want to thank you for getting up early and chatting with us and talking about process improvement. Our good friend Don Lundy down there in Charleston, South Carolina. Don, everybody's praying, making sure everything stays safe down there. And our good friend Rob Lawrence, he had to jump off. So he's left us a little bit early. This is Chris Sabalero. I want to thank you for joining us, and we look forward to chatting with you guys again real soon.